Thanks to Shopify for supporting the Productivity Show. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like ourselves the resources once reserved only for big business. For a free trial, go to shopify.com/TPS. Thanks also to Rocket Money for supporting the podcast. Now, what's Rocket Money, you ask? Well, you've heard us talk about Truebill, lowering bills, canceling subscriptions, and more. Well, Truebill has changed its name to Rocket Money. So start canceling your unused subscriptions and save money at rocketmoney.com/TPS. All right, welcome to The Productivity Show, a podcast where we believe you can get the important things done without having to sacrifice your health, your family, and the things that matter to you. This is Brooks from Asian Efficiency, where we help people become more productive in work and in life. And in this episode, I am honored to welcome Sterling Hawkins. He's an entrepreneur, public speaker, investor, if you name it. I'm guessing Sterling's probably done it at some point or the other. But specifically, I wanted to have Sterling on the podcast because he's also the author of a new book called Hunting Discomfort, How to Get Breakthrough Results in Life and Business No Matter What. And I'm really fascinated about, well, first of all, the no matter what part, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I'm really fascinated by this concept of how discomfort, like what it means, how it can be helpful. I mean, discomfort doesn't sound like things people usually want to look for. So we're going to be diving into that about a bunch of other things. But, you know, we might as well get started. Sterling, welcome to the show. And how's it going?
Brooks, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate joining you and looking forward to diving into the conversation here. It's going to be a blast.
Awesome. Well, as you're a first-time guest, I guess I'll explain the way it goes. So the way we start every single episode is we share top three resources. So usually it's my co-host Tan and I, we talk about three things that are like making us more productive lately, we're loving, or just, you know, things we want to share. And since you're a guest, I thought I'd share the floor with you. Do you have three things you want to share with the audience?
I do. And they might be a little bit non-traditional. You know, there's Calendly and all these really cool and functional tools out there. But I'm always a fan of speeding up by slowing down. And the first thing I'd recommend is a book by Michael Brown called The Presence Process. I've done probably thousands of hours of breath work and yoga work and meditation training and countless other things like that. And this book, I think, captures the essence of that the best. So that would be number one. A friend of mine, his name's Sam Abraham, he's a yoga teacher, and he has phenomenal yoga that he makes available online for anybody that wants to join him. And the third is not really a specific resource, but something anybody can Google, and it's called an emotion wheel. And I think you'll find, you know, as we're digging into the conversation here, how helpful that'll be. But I keep one right here next to my desk. So whenever I'm feeling something, I can start to put some language to it and really understand what it is. And by capturing what it is in language, it helps us move beyond it faster. And so all three of those things are great ways to speed up by slowing down.
Right on. I'm going to have to check out that discomfort emotion wheel. That sounds really cool.
It is very cool. I should have put it in the book in retrospect.
save it for the second book, right?
Exactly.
Right on. Well, we're going to have links to all of those in the show notes. So you can find the show notes by looking in your podcast app, you know, just swipe and they'll be there. Or you can go to theproductivityshow.com, find this episode, and they'll be right there with the episode. All right, let's get into it. So Sterling, I kind of introduced you, but public speaker, entrepreneur, investor doesn't really say a lot. So maybe I'll give it to you, let you have it in your words. Like, who are you? What do you do? And maybe talk a little bit about what led you to focus on this topic, discomfort, that, you know, like I said, a lot of people kind of try to avoid. Yeah. Maybe like, what was your journey to get to that?
Yeah, well, I will tell you, I did not start out hunting discomfort. I started out avoiding it. And the biggest thing I hear from people is they'll say, Sterling, let me tell you about my family, my business, my relationships, my bank account. I don't need to hunt discomfort. I'm surrounded by it. And my response is always the same, which is, oh, you're not hunting discomfort. You're living with it, which is a very distinct thing. And, you know, there may be plenty of reasons and rationality why things are the way they are. But the bottom line is that our results, whether they're personal results or professional results, whether we're talking about hard things like money or softer things like love and joy and happiness, are all determined by the discomfort that we're avoiding. And when we step into that discomfort and we open ourselves to it, it unleashes just limitless potential. Now, my work is with the leaders of companies, and how we do this is we step through five processes that I'm sure we'll get into. I mean, it's really the foundation of the book. And it's one of the things in my life that I'm incredibly grateful for, because like I said, I didn't start out teaching this kind of thing. I was an entrepreneur. I founded a company right out of college with my dad and sold it to a group in Silicon Valley, where it became the Apple Pay before Apple Pay. And people looked at this thing. This is like early 2000s, right? It was way before Apple Pay. They hadn't launched any of that stuff. Nobody knew what it was. And here was this little fingerprint sensor that sat next to credit card terminals. And when you put your finger down, all your credit cards account would come up, your loyalty cards, anything like that. Just like Apple Pay, just before Apple Pay. And we raised over $550 million US dollars, multi-billion dollar valuation. Brooks, I was flying high at this point. I was like, no need for discomfort. I'm exactly. Perfectly comfortable in first class and stayed at the Four Seasons, you know? And then you know, we were so big, we had offices all over the world. There were 700 people. And then there were kind of fun things you see in the movies, like models in the office and parties at the Four Seasons. Like it was a scene out of Wolf of Wall Street. It was insane. But we grew too quickly. We raised too much money too fast. And when the housing market collapsed, our investment dried up and all $500 million US gone. And in what felt like a snap of a finger, I was thrown into the massive discomfort of the unknown. And this is where the discomfort found me.
Right.
I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to turn. And I kept taking actions, but they weren't the right actions. And I wasn't really committed to them because honestly, I think I lost a lot of my identity when that company went under. And you know, not only did I no longer have the job, but eventually I ran out of cash. I go from this beautiful penthouse apartment in downtown San Francisco to the spare bedroom in my parents' house. It's not a good look in your 30s. I can tell you that.
Right.
I think 20s, you can get away with it. 30s, that's not a good look for most people, especially me. And I'm there and I remember the first night I'm staring at the ceiling. I'm in over 6 figures of personal debt. And I don't know if I can or even if I want to go on. And I said something to myself that was hugely transformative to me. It's become very special to me in the center of everything that I've done ever since, which is, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what exactly I'm going to do, but I'm going to keep putting one foot in front of the other, no matter what. And it really was a personal mantra just to get myself out of bed in the morning or to make the call to the creditor or figure out about maybe getting a new job or starting a new company. I would do all those things no matter what. And that was really the beginning of building myself back. And since I've understood discomfort is not something to avoid, but something that provides an incredible opportunity for something new, something greater to arise.
So, you know, I could be wrong, but I'm going to guess most people listening to this didn't found a fundamental technology, you know, 12 years too early and lose millions and millions of dollars. But I think the concept of discomfort is pretty universal. I'm going to guess you would agree sure. with that, but maybe we should like take a step back and talk about what we mean by this word discomfort. You know, it's like, I just finished watching the show Moon Knight and one of the main characters, you know, spoiler alert, walks around with glass in his slippers. So that's, you know, one extreme of discomfort, but you know, it could be like sleeping without a mattress, you know, going to those hot and cool plunge pools, could be going to Toastmasters for the first time. Like, what are we talking about in general when we talk about discomfort?
Well, when I say discomfort, I'm talking about it in the broadest sense of the word. So it could be pain, could be fear, could be grief, and it could be mental, physical, or emotional. As part of the research that went into this book, I found a study that was done at the University of Michigan. And they were studying, of all things, discomfort, right? And they were scanning people's brains and had all these monitors hooked up to their body as they were going through physical discomfort. You know, think like you break a leg or something, physical discomfort, emotional discomfort, you lose a job or maybe break up with a loved one, something like that. And what they discovered in that study just blew me away. no matter what kind of discomfort somebody was going through, physical, mental, emotional, the brain and body processed it almost identically. So much so that you can take acetaminophen or Tylenol for your emotional discomfort, believe it or not. I'm not suggesting that, right? But the point is that the body processes it in exactly the same way or very close to that. And I took a step further and I said, you know what? If the body processes discomfort the same way anywhere, that means that we can build a muscle for it everywhere. Yeah, everybody knows you go to the gym to build your biceps. Well, if you want to build your resiliency, your ability to create some breakthrough growth and ability to change with the upcoming times, you need to hunt discomfort. There's just no other way.
I guess the flip side of that is, you know, we all know what happens if you don't exercise, if you don't go to the gym, if you don't take care of that sore knee or whatever that you have, yeah. like you just ignore it. You know, things are not going to get better, right? Things are going to get atrophy. Things are, you know, you're going to get out of shape. Maybe you get some illness or something like that. I guess it's the same thing with the other types of discomfort too, where, and you even kind of like said it, you know, if you, a lot of the issues that we have kind of come from avoiding discomfort. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what happens if you avoid it, not in the physical sense, but in other types.
Yeah. Well, in all senses, because like we're saying, they're all processed about the same way. Discomfort's necessary to orient us to the world. And if we're denying it, avoiding it, medicating it, we're not properly seeing and interacting with what's really there. And I found this really interesting story about a study of leprosy, believe it or not, back in the 1800s. And, you know, leprosy is a terrible disease that has since been cured, but they all thought that it was the disease causing people's skin to fall off and limbs to come off and, all the terrible effects of leprosy. What they found, though, is that's not actually what the bacteria did. The bacteria numbed the person, numbed their ability to feel physical pain. And in so doing, if they bumped an elbow or cut themselves or burned themselves, they weren't adequately taking care of it. So it would eventually get infected and, all those terrible things would happen. So that's a physical example, but I would say just by way of how we process discomfort, it all works about the same way. If we turn off the senses of discomfort, we're not going to be properly oriented to what we need to pay attention to and what we don't need to pay any attention to. Now, I'll tell you, I think where we get into trouble is confusing discomfort with danger. And they're very different. You know, one of the things that scared me most when I was in that dark time was speaking in public, believe it or not. Clearly, I've overcome a lot of that fear. But there's really no danger standing up in front of a room, especially if you're at like a Toastmasters meeting or something else where it's purely to develop yourself. And yet, I think many people can relate to the extreme symptoms of fear or discomfort that might arise. There's no real danger there. And so as we hunt that discomfort, we get better and better at distinguishing, well, what's actually dangerous to ourselves physically, emotionally, mentally? Where are the things I actually need to look out for in my life and in my business? And where am I just uncomfortable, not really aligned with what's dangerous in the world?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Just last night, I was watching this movie about a band called Dinosaur Jr. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. Yeah. Well, anyway, they were kind of like a 90s rock band, and they were interviewing the different members, and they were interviewing the drummer. And he was saying how even to this day, he still gets extreme stage fright. He feels almost physically sick before he goes on the stage. And this is a guy who's played at festivals for hundreds of thousands of people. This is a guy who's, been in MTV videos and all that sort of stuff. And he still, goes on that stage and still does his thing. And it's amazing to me. And I guess that's an example, right? He has that discomfort. He knows that it's a thing, but he knows it's discomfort. It's not danger. He knows when he goes on that stage, an audience member isn't going to do something or, nothing bad. That's going to happen. It's just like he hunts the discomfort essentially, but he kind of like is able to distinguish it between that and danger. So yeah, that's interesting.
Exactly. And it's really not about the discomfort itself. I think discomfort is the pathway. It will only work when you're hunting discomfort if you surrender to it, you open yourself to it. That way, that discomfort can move through you and you're forever free of it. And that's really the point of this whole thing, right? To get through the things that aren't actually dangerous, to clear those things out of the way, to let go of that discomfort that's not aligned with either your goals or how you're interacting with reality and the world around you, and then functioning at a much, much higher level. I think about, you've heard of the Phoenix Rising, of course, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Yeah, I encounter it a lot, especially with entrepreneurs and startup companies, and they see themselves as this like Phoenix rising from the ashes of some failed previous attempt. And I did as well. What I didn't realize, though, is the most important part of that Phoenix rising is not the rising itself, it's the burning. The burning of the views, the beliefs, the perspectives about one of three things: yourself, others, or the world. And as you can burn those things, not literally, obviously, but figuratively, let go of those things, surrender those things, organically, you're going to start to rise.
Interesting. All right. I want to loop back to something that you mentioned earlier, which is, you know, you were saying you had five discomforts, five tools or whatever, you know, however you right. want to describe it, five discomfort that you wanted to hide. And of course, you know, since you mentioned that, there's no way I'm going to let you get away with not diving into that a little bit. Cause you know, we love, anyone who listens to the podcast, yeah. we love frameworks. We're always talking about frameworks. And so my framework light went on when you started mentioning that. So maybe you could dive a little bit into what those five, that your framework of five discomforts, that you kind of like recommend that people hunt and how that would help them.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, our results, any kinds of results, are defined by the discomfort that we're avoiding. And as you point out, there's really five main buckets of discomfort that people will avoid. And everybody gets all of them, don't worry. But one probably is rising to the top for you. The first one is the discomfort of facing reality. It's what we're talking about with the Phoenix rising, right? Being willing to let go of things that maybe you hold true about yourself or you hold true about others. It doesn't mean that they're not true. It just means that maybe they're not the only truth, or maybe there's a greater truth out there. The second thing is the discomfort of self-doubt, something that we all have and is necessary, by the way, because I would say it's something inside of you that tells you what you really care about. That's what self-doubt is. We just get into trouble when it stops us and it convinces us not to move forward and take steps towards the things that we ultimately want to achieve. The third discomfort is the discomfort of exposure. You know, people seeing, groups seeing, our family seeing, our businesses seeing who we really are. And from an evolutionary standpoint, it makes a ton of sense, because if you were rejected in the caveman days, it meant not that you didn't have friends anymore, it meant death. And we've evolved with very similar feelings. So if people reject who we really are, we feel like we're dying. And that's simply not the case in much of the world today. So it's overcoming that fear of exposure to unleash what's really inside of you. The fourth discomfort is something we've all encountered, I'm sure. Problems, obstacles, limits. They're there and they're valid, right? Oftentimes there is not enough money, or there's not enough time or not enough resources or whatever it is. But again, if that's where we stop, we're stuck. In the book, and we'll get into some of the antidotes here, but there are different ways to look at those challenges to give you a different perspective, to actually use those challenges as the pathway to new results. It's a very stoic perspective, right? The obstacle is the way. And then the last discomfort is the one that rules them all. I think it underlies everything. We're lulled into this state of comfort by all the predictions about the future. What's the weather going to be tomorrow? What's the traffic? What's the news? I'm going to wake up tomorrow and it's going to look pretty much like today. Except we forget that tomorrow is not promised to us at any level. You know, those of us that are lucky enough to wake up tomorrow could have an entirely new existence. And I think the pandemic's a great example that changed the world almost overnight. And so overcoming that discomfort of uncertainty, not knowing what's next, is the ultimate. And when you can get through that one, it helps you deal with all of them.
Don't you just love that sound? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify. And with Shopify, you'll create an online store in your vibe. And everyone knows I'm all about the vibes. You'll discover new customers and grow the following that keeps them coming back. Shopify just makes it so simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. Whether your thing is vintage t-shirts, snowboard stickers, soap, or recipes for ghee, start selling with Shopify and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of your favorite businesses worldwide. Shopify just has all the sales channels sorted, so your business keeps growing. From an in-person point-of-sale system, I bet you didn't know Shopify works with in-person sales too, to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to 24/7 support and free libraries full of educational content, Shopify's got you every step of the way. I mean, every single minute, new sellers around the world make their very first sale with Shopify, and you will too. So when you're ready to launch your thing into the spotlight, do it with Shopify, the commerce platform backing millions of businesses down the street and around the globe. And this is a possibility all powered by Shopify. Shopify just makes any idea you have real and opens up endless possibilities. I mean, think about it. How weird is it that a group of people living in Texas, Canada, and the Philippines are able to run a business making productivity resources? It's really amazing if you think about it. And I just love how Shopify makes it so easy for anyone to successfully run your own business. It's never been easier to start and grow a business thanks to Shopify. So go on, try Shopify for free and start selling anywhere. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/TPS. Go to shopify.com/TPS to start selling online today. That's shopify.com/TPS. Do you have calendars full of payment reminders or maybe inboxes full of bills? Maybe you have spreadsheets full of calculations. Well, if even one of these sounds familiar, it's time to take back control of your financial life with Rocket Money, which used to be known as Truebill. So why did Truebill change its name to Rocket Money? Well, this is what I heard. Truebill, which is now backed by Rocket Companies, has grown from a bill management app into a full-on personal finance empowerment tool that helps over 3.4 million people with budgeting, lowering bills, canceling subscriptions, and more, saving each of these members on average $700 a year. And with all that growth comes the next evolution in Truebill's story, a new name. Bottom line, Rocket Money is everything we've loved about Truebill, but with a fresh look and feel. For example, I like how easy it is Rocket Money is to use. You just connect up your bank and credit card accounts. It takes a look at what you're spending your money on, and then boom, you can start saving money right away. So start canceling your unused subscriptions and save money at rocketmoney.com/TPS. That's rocketmoney.com/TPS, or download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. The uncertainty one is so interesting, just looping, you know, starting with the end. What you said just triggered to me, because I feel like a lot of times the things, when we get frustrated with things, when we find something difficult, it's not so much the situation that we're reacting to, it's what our expectation of the situation was.
Totally.
and then we're kind of reacting against that. And if we could get a handle on managing those expectations, I don't mean having lowered expectations, but like being mindful, I guess, of our expectations, I guess that is like a big step towards getting past that.
Yeah. Well, in letting go of the expectations that maybe weren't met, or even if they were met. Famous psychologist Carl Jung, who I'm sure you know, many of your listeners know, right? He said, we cannot change anything until we accept it. Condemnation doesn't liberate. It oppresses. And I think that's true. You know, as we go forward, we might be taking the time, spending the money, you know, going through whatever actions that we need to take to achieve the goal that we want to achieve. But if we're holding on to bitterness or resentment or wishing things that were another way, or holding on to those expectations that didn't come through, it is like an anchor keeping us fixed with the results that we already have. So surrendering those expectations, I think, is critical, maybe the most important.
Let's loop back to the first one, facing reality, because in the book, you told this interesting story, which I had never heard of, and it involves a fish called a pike, which I had heard of the fish, but I even looked it up. We don't have any around here, so that's why I know nothing about pikes at all. But I thought it was a great story. So maybe if you don't mind, like, stealing stuff from the book, would you mind sharing that story of the pike? Because I thought it was really interesting.
Well, I'll tell you, I never thought I was going to be writing a book that had fish included in it, but here we are.
Here we are.
And it turns out there's something called the pike syndrome. And scientists for years have been conducting this study over and over again, and the results are the same every time. Now, the pike is a famously carnivorous fish. That means it eats other fish. It's very aggressive and will go after them all the time. So the scientists, they took this pike, and they put it in a fish tank with its prey fish, the fish that it's going to eat, except they put a piece of glass between the pike and the fish that were supposed to be its dinner. And the pike did what the pike should do, which is it went after its prey, except it kept bumping into that glass over and over and over and over again until inevitably, without fail, every time, the pike eventually settles down to the bottom of that tank and gives up. Now, what I thought would happen is when you take the glass out and you let the pike back with its meal, that the pike would just start eating the fish, but that's not what happens. The prey fish can literally swim by the pike's face. It can bump into its mouth and the pike will refuse to eat them for so long that the pike, poor pike, actually ends up dying. What happened is that the pike's view of reality was changed by discomfort. Sure, there was a period in time where the pike couldn't get through the glass, it couldn't get its prey fished, but that has changed. And as humans, we function much the same way. That's why it's called the pike syndrome. When we experience discomfort, we bump into problems or roadblocks or whatever it is, and we start to define our personality, like, here's what I'm cut up for, here's what I'm not good at. We're essentially putting glass barriers around us. And as the world changes, as we change, well, it doesn't mean that those barriers are still there. We may think they are, we may feel like they are, but fortunately for all of us, we're not pikes. We're not condemned to the bottom of the tank forever. We can confront some of those limiting beliefs and break through them. The trick is, it's just not comfortable.
I guess that's the, I guess, and you hear that, you know, once you become attuned to these things, I guess, especially you must hear them all the time when you're having all conversations with people, and they'll say, you know, people will self-identify like, oh, I'm bad at math. Oh, I'm, you know, I'm not good at public speaking. You know, that type of thing. I guess if you're in tune with this, you must hear it all the time. What are some ways do you think that people can kind of like get past this and at least have a warning sign that this is happening?
Yeah. Well, I think the discomfort is the sign. It's not a warning sign to move away from it. It's a warning sign to say, here's where your new results are. This is something to open to. And I think the best way to go through some of those things is actually the second step, which I call get a tattoo. And I call it get a tattoo because I'm talking about committing so deeply, there's no going back, right? There's no plan B. There's no bridge you can go back on. There's no exit plan. You commit in a way where there's no going back. And when you do that, it forces you to move forward, and you will inevitably, by design, be in a new place. I'll give you a personal example. When I was in that dark place, the thing that scared me most, I think I said, was public speaking. I would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. Like, I love that Seinfeld quote. And I thought, okay, if that's my biggest fear, I need to go through that. I need to commit to going through it. So I didn't do it in a small way. I figured, you know, might as well go down with flying colors. I'm going to apply to speak at this conference in Singapore. And I don't know how exactly it happened. Maybe it was destiny or something cheesy like that, or the stars aligned. But the conference director that I applied to and ended up talking with invited me to be the keynote speaker of their conference. It was in like 3 months from when I had applied. And I practiced an insane amount. And there were many times throughout those months leading up to it where I would have rather quit, not gone forward, stopped practicing. But I had signed a legal agreement. I'd gotten a tattoo. I committed in a way where there was no going back. And the nerves did not dissipate the more I practiced. I was terrified when the day finally came and I got up on the stage, and it's a good thing I practiced, Brooks, because I think I blacked out during that talk. Like, I was so scared, and I get off and I think I bombed, and I'm kind of covering my eyes so I don't have to see anybody. And I'm hoping the conference director doesn't ask for the money back or something. And he's making a beeline for me, of course. I'm like, oh no, he's coming. And he looks at me and he goes, "Sterling, that was the best talk I've seen in my 17 years of doing this." It's insane. To this day, I don't think he was in the talk that I actually gave. I think it was just something nice he said to speakers, but he did go on to put me in touch with all of his conference director friends. And I realized that, well, discomfort might not be comfortable. In fact, it is by definition not, but it is the pathway to entirely new things. And by committing to the thing that I feared most and carrying through with it, it opened the door to the beginnings of a keynote speaking business, which is a huge component of what I do today.
I think, first of all, that's awesome. I think the what you said about practicing and, you know, blacking out is so key too. Like, you know, getting a tattoo is one thing. I think another thing might be, you know, preparing so much that it's almost like automatic that you're able to succeed at. Like, this, my oldest son is in high school, and you know, when he has to do public speaking, this is one thing I've tried to hammer into him so much, is like, practice way more than you think you will need to.
Way more.
And then, because when your mind blanks, which inevitably it will, it almost doesn't matter because you're kind of like going on autopilot. So yeah, I love that. I love that example.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you with your son is a great example. We need people around us to support. And that's the third step in the system. I didn't call it something nice like build your tribe or have a board of directors for you personally. I called it build a street gang, because it's got some teeth to it. You don't want people that are just going to pay you niceties or not tell you where you can improve or not hold you accountable or anything else. You want people that are really committed to your success more than they're committed to your identity or to your emotions. I'm not saying they don't care about your emotions. I'm saying that they hold you true to what you said you wanted to do and who you said you wanted to be. The most important member of the street gang, there are four members, the most important one, at least for purposes of this conversation, is the muscle, the person that's going to hold you accountable. And I found this incredible research that says when you're personally accountable to a specific person, a specific day, specific time with a specific deliverable, you're 95% more likely to achieve that goal. Show me somebody that's really committed to achieving what they want to achieve, and I'll show you somebody that's got personal accountability. It doesn't feel good, but it is scientifically proven to be the pathway to get the results that you want.
Oh yeah, 100%. This is something that my co-host and I bang the drum on all the time, because I feel like not enough people talk about this, that accountability is like a productivity superpower. You know, you could have the worst habits, you could have like, you know, no task management system whatsoever, but if you're accountable for someone to do something and you know you have to go to them and tell them whether you did it or not, that can overcome so many other obstacles. So I 100% agree with you.
Absolutely. You know, another thing that's equally as important is the love. It's a street king member that's going to accept you no matter what. And whether that's the same person that's holding you accountable or different, it's probably best if it's somebody different, a friend or a significant other, doesn't matter who it is, but somebody that accepts you regardless of where you are, what you're struggling through, what you failed with, what you succeeded with. And when you have that acceptance, it gives you some ground to stand on to live up to what you want to achieve, even if you miss some of those accountability metrics.
The thing you said about limiting beliefs is interesting, because the problem with, or at least I feel like the problem with limited beliefs a lot of times is you don't, and maybe this is where the street gang comes in. Yeah. A lot of times you don't even really know that you have them, right? You know, in the book you talk about expanding your reality. A lot of times though, you don't even know these limiting beliefs that you have unless someone else kind of like shines the light on them. Do you have any tips or tools for breaking through and expanding your reality when you might not even be aware that limiting belief is there?
Yeah. Well, I would say anywhere that you don't have the results that you want, it's not simply because you're not disciplined enough. It's because your view of reality isn't quite what it needs to be to achieve that result. You know, I think anybody could tell you, if you want results, you need to take the prerequisite actions. You know, if I want a coffee from Starbucks, I got to go to Starbucks and go get it or order it on an app, right? Everybody knows that. But there's something that occurs before that, which is your view, your perspective, the beliefs you have about yourself, another, or the world around you. And it's those beliefs that then giving rise to the actions you're going to take, and then the results just organically come from that. Now, let's just take fitness because it's an easy example. You might be banging your head against the wall January 15th when you don't want to go to the gym anymore. That's natural for, I think, a lot of people. And if it's not the gym for you, put something else in that place, right? Well, behind your unwillingness to want to continue going to the gym is a view. And as you can distinguish that view, understand what it is about the gym, what it is about yourself, what it is about the world that's having you not want to go to the gym in the first place, it frees you from that discomfort. So you can take the right actions, go to the gym. And then, of course, over time, you get super fit, I'm sure.
Let's jump to challenges, because you mentioned that, because, and I think the challenge one is really interesting, because I feel like the longer someone's in a job or a role, or, you know, it doesn't have to be a job, any part of their life, it becomes a lot easier to avoid challenges. Like when you start something new, you know, everything's a challenge. So, you know, you can get in that flow state that people talk about, and, you know, it's a challenge, you're overcoming it. But the longer you're in a situation, those challenges kind of don't come up as organically as they maybe did at the beginning. But since we're talking about hunting discomfort, obviously, you know, we're talking about how you want to find those challenges. So if you're in this kind of situation where maybe the thing you're doing, and you might not have even been aware of it till you're listening to this, but maybe the things you're doing aren't as challenging as maybe they were before, what do you have some strategies for, like, going out and finding new challenges?
Yeah, of course. Well, and I think it's important to acknowledge that challenges, problems, obstacles, limits, they are real and they're valid, right? Sometimes there is just not enough time, or there's not enough money or not enough resources. But that doesn't mean that you can't achieve the result you want to achieve just in a totally different way. You just have to let go of the pathway that you thought was going to be the way that you wanted to achieve it. One of my favorite ways to flip it. Flip is the fourth step of how you understand and work with problems, is it's using the Stoic philosophy of the obstacle is the way. And one of the ways to do that in the book is by creating a bigger problem. And you know, I might be a little bit crazy, but just hear me out on this. When you create a bigger problem, it changes how you see that problem in the first place. And the story I use is Richard Branson, of course, of Virgin fame. And back in the 90s, he was running Virgin Atlantic, the airline company, and he wanted to update all of his jets with the latest entertainment systems. Well, he needed 10 million pounds to do that. And he just simply couldn't get it. The economic times were tough and he couldn't raise the money and he was stuck. Now, he could have just stopped, but he didn't. He flipped it. He said, okay, how can I create a bigger problem here? And instead of just looking for new entertainment systems and the money for them, he decided to buy an entirely new fleet of jets, which was something like a $4 billion proposition, a much, much bigger problem. But he called Airbus, called Boeing, and sure enough, they sold him brand new jets with the latest in entertainment systems, and he was able to find that money, no problem. So sometimes the problem is not a place to start or stop. It's a place to start. You just have to look about it differently, sometimes by making a bigger problem.
Oh, I love that. And I think this is something that one of our a friend of my co-host, Tan, he always says is there's always a third option. So you might be struggling between two options, or, and I guess this gets to uncertainty as well, or you might, you know, you might be where you are and you're trying to get somewhere else. There's always, always, always a third one that you're not seeing yet. And it sounds like Flip It is kind of like that. Like, okay, these are what I know, but let's like change up the parameters and something else might become more apparent and achievable.
Yeah, well, that's the reason the commitment in the first place is so important. There's something in our brains called the reticular activation system, the RAS for short. And what it does is it's kind of like the bouncer to our conscious mind, where it decides what from our subconscious is going to percolate up and what is not. And I'll give you a perfect example of how it works. I just had to get a new car here because I moved to Denver, Colorado, and my sedan wasn't cutting it. So I had to go SUV. And I see the car that I bought everywhere. That's the RAS. It's kicking in. It's not that suddenly there's all these new cars on the road, just like mine. It's just now I'm paying attention for them. That RAS, that bouncer to my conscious mind is now surfacing that because I told it was important. Now, when we don't commit, that RAS is going to be your worst enemy because it's going to show you all the reasons why you can't, shouldn't, or won't be able to move forward. It's going to pick those things out and show them to you. And it's going to be a very logical, rational reason to stop. But when we commit in a way where there's no going back, it retunes that RAS to look for new openings for action. Just like Branson did with Virgin. He had committed, he really wanted those entertainment systems. So it opened up some new ways to think and act. And of course it came with some incredible new results.
All right. So going by my notes, we've got four of your five steps. So expand your reality, get a tattoo, build a street gang, flip it.
Right.
There's a fifth one, which you mentioned. So maybe you can talk to us about that. I want to make sure we cover that as well.
Yeah, we did touch on it a little bit. It's called surrender.
Surrender.
And when I'm talking about surrender, it doesn't mean give up. It doesn't mean sit on the couch and watch Netflix and order pizza. Although, you know, there's plenty of time for that. What I'm talking about is very actively and intentionally accept what is and what isn't exactly the way it is. You know, again, that Carl Jung quote about not accepting things is something that's anchoring you to the past. And when we can let go of our expectations, how we thought it should go, what we think we should deserve, it frees you up to take much better actions. And it actually lets that discomfort move through you in a way where you're ultimately free of it.
Yeah, my wife gave me a good reminder of this last weekend. We went up to visit a friend in the wine country of the province where I live in. And we drove up as a long weekend and I was just getting really frustrated with the traffic. And she said, well, we're driving up there.
Yeah.
Everyone else in Vancouver is driving up there on a long weekend. You're going to be having traffic problems for the next two hours. So, you know, you can sit there and rage about it or you can, you know, surrender to it. It doesn't mean that it's not happening. It doesn't mean that, you know, you can't do little things to help, but, you know, just, you're going to have a lot more productive time over the next couple hours if you accept that is what is happening to you. And yeah, that's good advice.
And it does really take some effort, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does.
It's easy to sink into the maybe anger or whatever it is about the traffic or anything else. But as you actively and intentionally let go of it, it does not only create a much better experience for everybody around you, but you're more oriented literally in the driver's seat and also figuratively to start taking different actions, do new things that open up new possibilities.
Awesome. So we have a thing on the podcast where we want to make sure that every episode we do, you know, we have our top three resources, but we also want every episode to be actionable. We want somebody to, like, when they press stop after listening to this, there's something they can take away and go and do. So again, when we have a guest, usually we want you to or we invite you to share something. So if someone was gonna go away from this episode and take some sort of action tomorrow or even better today, what would you want people to do?
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite things, and I do it myself, is to commit to one thing that you're going to do every day, no matter what. It doesn't have to be the same thing. It can change over time. It might be, hey, I'm going to call my mom today and I'm going to make that sales call tomorrow, whatever it is. But make sure that you commit to doing it in the morning and you actually follow through and do that thing in the afternoon. what it will do is it actually starts to build your muscle to understand that the world's an uncertain place. Things will change, they will shift, they will adjust, they will grow. But I'm the kind of person, I'm proving to myself that I'm the kind of person that I can achieve what I want to achieve regardless of what stands in my way.
I love that.
Thanks. Yeah. I've got in my bathroom mirror, just a line, a blank, no matter what. And I fill it in every day.
That's a great tip too. Right on. Yeah. Even if you don't have to put on your bathroom mirror, you can just have it written on a piece of paper, something, no matter what, what you're going to do. Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Sterling, I want to open the floor to you. Do you have any other closing comments, anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to make sure to mention, anything else you wanted to say before we wrap up?
Well, I would just invite people to join us. I mean, no matter what, really isn't about me. It's the hundreds and thousands of people around the world that have committed to really big goals, always outside of their comfort zone. And they're committed to going through the discomfort to actually achieve them. And you can find us on Facebook and website. The book's got some resources as well. But I'd invite you and all your listeners to kind of join that. Either personally, just tell yourself, hey, I'm going to move forward, I'm going to achieve these things I want to achieve. Or more formally, you can find us online, and we'd love to have you all join up.
All right. So you mentioned on Facebook. Anywhere else, if somebody wants to learn more about No Matter What or you, we'll have a link to the book, of course. But anywhere else you want people to go to find out more?
Well, the best place to find all that stuff is my website, which is sterlinghawkins.com. You can find my Facebook, Instagram, all that social media stuff there. You can see some of the incredibly inspiring things that some of the people from the community have done, from create multi-million dollar businesses, to change careers, to start families, to summit Kilimanjaro. You can see all that stuff there and maybe get inspired to do something yourself.
Perfect. So sterlinghawkins.com. We'll make sure to have a link to that and everything else we talked about in the show notes. So that's at theproductivityshow.com. Thank you, Sterling. This is really, really great. I learned a lot of really actionable tips. I love that no matter what thing, I'm going to start doing that tomorrow. I'm going to take action too. So thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next Productive Monday.